Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
And welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Jill Kaufman. Last year, celebrated playwright Israel Horovitz turned one of his plays, My Old Lady, into a movie. It's set in France, where Horovitz lived for many years.
And where he befriended the legendary playwright Samuel Beckett, his father of choice, as Horovitz told Here and Now's Robin Young.
He really knew who he was. When he put pen to paper, he knew what he was trying to do. And I should say now that he said to me loudly and clearly one day, in French, he said, un écrivain qui explique son écriture, c'est comme un escargot qui explique sa coquille. A writer who explains his writing is very much like a snail explaining his shell. And I think he was right. I know he was right.
And yet, here he is, Israel Horovitz, sitting across the table from us now to talk about his writing. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So we love to hear you talk about your writing, and we think we've got a pretty good reason why, which we'll get to in a second. But given what Beckett told you, I just want to ask, why do you do these interviews? Why do you talk about writing if it's kind of...
I think you have a point, and I should leave immediately.
That would be a first, ushering my own guest out of the studio. No, I mean, because I wanted to start with that, because that piece of advice or notion that Beckett told you comes up in a lot of interviews. What do you think he was really getting at?
Well, I don't think he was talking about interviews. I think he was literally talking about a creative process and explaining how you got from. I mean, it is safe for me to say that when I start a play, I always think I know where it's going and why. And at some point in the writing, I hear myself saying, isn't it interesting where this play is taking me?
Uh-huh.
But explaining how that happened is just ridiculous.
Right. Well, we wanted to talk with you now, first of all, just because it's wonderful to have you on the program, but also because next month, the Gloucester Stage Company, which you co-founded, is staging New England's premiere of your latest play, Gloucester Blue, which is set in Gloucester. So who's the, there's a snail shell question here.
Well,
somewhere.
This is possibly why I'm here. You've just given me purpose. Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about Gloucester Blue?
Well, it's a newish play. I directed a workshop of it at Cherry Lane Theater in New York, featuring a Boston actor named Robert Walsh, who's kind of genius level actor, and I brought him to New York for this workshop, and he's now interim artistic director of Gloucester Stage Company and will be re-performing that. Is that a word, re-performing? But he'll be performing again in that role. And a wonderful actor from New York, from Barefoot Theater Company named Francisco Solorzano will be coming in to do it as well. And I think we open around the 17th of September. This coming week, Gloucester Stage is doing The Flick, Annie Baker's play that won the Pulitzer Prize last year. So it's a pretty exciting season.
Lots of good stuff happening there. Now, Gloucester Blue is, I'm always a little, I feel a little trepidation sort of summarizing a play to the playwright who wrote it, but it's about two men, Latham, am I saying that right? And Stumpy, who are...
Latham. How do you know that?
The magic of this internet thing. Who are working on a like on an old cannery? Is that right? Or
well, it's an old it's kind of a class struggle play.
Yeah.
There are two local guys are painting, are preparing a loft, a building, an old factory building that their grandmothers had worked in as laborers, and some rich couple have bought it for God knows how many million dollars, and they're kind of rehabbing it for them. And I'll go no further than
right.
that. I think it's really funny, and it's really fun, and it makes its point.
Yeah, it does. And so I know you don't want to go any further, but there's one little part of it that I do want to ask you about, because NPR makes a cameo in some of the dialogue, because Latham says I guess Stumpy's tastes maybe are more along the public radio lines, and Latham's aren't. But he says,
"Oh, that's right. There's a lot of public radio talk."
Latham says NPR brings him down, and then Stumpy says, "I can see what you're saying. NPR can be depressing." And then and Stumpy says, "Yeah, that's true. All things considered, can bring you down." And then Latham says, "NPR can make ice cream sound depressing." I hope you're not feeling like too depressed right now.
Well, that's a point of view.
But to tell me, I mean, you said it's a kind of a play about class struggles, and why, especially set in Gloucester, and why do you want to write about that?
Well, when I was growing up, my father was a truck driver, in fact, and at age 50, he went to law school and he became a lawyer. So I sort of grew up with, you know, a white collar and a blue collar at the same time, and I'm happy about that. I mean, Frank McCourt once said, "My life saved my life," and I think my life certainly gave me the life I have now. But I've always been sensitive to working class people, and to be in Gloucester, that really was kind of this odd blend of working class people, fishermen, stonecutters. And kind of landed gentry, and then this kind of artist community of Hopper and FitzHenry Lane and Winslow Homer and all of that. It's to suddenly see working class life disappear was really shocking, or let's just say striking. Yeah. And I started to write plays that were set in Gloucester that had to do with the disappearance of working class life, or at least the disappearance of respect for working class people.
And so what does it mean to you now that the Gloucester Stage Company will be staging the play? I mean, it must take on some kind of special additional resonance when the play is actually going to be performed in and amongst the people that is talking
well,
about.
Of course, because for one thing, it's a Gloucester play, and I've done it in Seattle. I've done it in I've done a reading in Paris, and this is the first time I've done it in Gloucester. So it's a Gloucester play that's coming home, and that's important. And of course, I'm interested in how local people will react to it, although I suspect they'll react quite well. But they'll have a kind of level of comprehension that nobody else in the world will have. They'll know if a car takes a wrong turn on the street or whatever. And so it's really fun. I love doing the Gloucester plays at Gloucester Stage. And I think years ago I can't remember the first one, I think it was called Mackerel. Mm-hmm. And I just tried it on for size. And I think I've written 12 or 13 or 14 plays that are now set in Gloucester that have to do with changing life in Gloucester, or life as I've seen it changing anyway.
Yeah. So you mentioned the word home, and that's something I want to talk with you a bit about, because you grew up, I mean, you've written more than 70 plays, they've been staged all over the place, many, many of them in France. But it seems to me that there is this draw for you to write about home, not necessarily Wakefield all the time, even though you have per se, but the sense of like places that are home, that feel like home. I mean, you know, maybe I should back up and just say, like, you know, what about your early plays that were titled Wakefield?
I did a cycle of plays. There were 7 plays. I had just gotten out of graduate school. I did a PhD program at City University of New York, and I wrote a trilogy called the Alfred Trilogy, I think. And Thornton Wilder was toward the end of his life, and I used to have dinner with him on Tuesday nights, drive up to Connecticut. These 3 plays were kind of parallel to Wakefield Mystery plays, but set in my hometown of Wakefield, Massachusetts. And Wilder read the 3 plays, and they were 3 three-act plays. It was a big commitment for him to read the damn things. And he was absolutely full of praise, but he spoke one sentence that really changed the course of my writing. He said, "Of course, there isn't very much Wakefield in those plays." Uh-huh. And what he meant, this is the man who created Grover's Corners, right, the best-loved small American town that never existed. And what he meant was I hadn't really captured the way people walk and talk in my hometown. And I wrote a little play called Hopscotch that was a very personal play. In fact, I wrote it. I was visiting my mother and father. I went into my father's office in our family home and typed it on his typewriter, the first draft. It was really short. And it was the first time that I had written dialogue and dialect that sounded the way people talked while I was growing up. And it was like a drug. I realized that I had spent so many years trying not to be a kid from Wakefield, but trying to be a New Yorker, you know, a New York player. And the thing that I had that was really unique was this special look at life that went through, you know, Wakefield eyeglasses, mm-hmm. that I could really. And Wilder's said something else that was marvelous. He said, if you write about one place and you get it right, you don't have to write about the world. And I've written plays like Park Your Car in Harvard Yard. That's a two-character play set in Gloucester with the toughest teacher that ever set foot in Gloucester High School. And somebody, he failed as a student who is now a woman in her 40s. He actually flunked her mother, her father, and her recently dead husband. And when the play is done in Paris, it's had five revivals and major productions in Paris, for example, but it's been done maybe in 25 languages. When it's done in Paris, people think the play is very French. When it's done in Germany, it's because everybody's had a teacher whose standards were too high.
Right. I love that this revelation to you about the power of the universal power about writing about the place you know best came at your father's typewriter. After Thornton Wilder, of course, led you down that path.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? It's really strange because my father would have been the last person on earth to understand what on earth I was writing about.
I mean, we're kind of dancing around the issue that he was a tough guy on you. I mean,
yeah, he's tough. Yeah, I think things that I'm 76 years old, so things that parents did to kids of my generation might, you know, in the name of disciplining their kids or teaching their kids, might send them to jail today. Enough said.
I guess so. Well,
there are 75 plays you can look at out there that will really explain it.
So that was going to be my next question. So, yeah. Okay. So we were talking about Wakefield and Israel Horovitz. This is one of those moments where, as a journalist, I'm debating in my head how much do I press him to tell me about his father. But I will give you reprieve from that. And let's talk about in the introduction, I mentioned that it has been written that you've said that Samuel Beckett was your father of choice. And that he was very influential to you. And in that tape that we played when you talked to Robin Young last year, that it wasn't so much about what he wrote, but how he lived.
For me.
For you.
I mean, his voice was, I think in this life, first of all, we have our fathers of chance and our fathers of choice, or our mothers of chance and our mothers of choice. I think that's just the way it is, that we as kids, we have a dream. Hopefully everybody has a dream of something big that they want to try, and then they meet someone who can really take them on that particular path, and that often becomes the parent of choice. And Beckett was clearly, for me, my father of choice. And his writing was less important to me, actually. I mean, I was terrified of imitating him. I wrote a play called Spared, a one-person play, about a guy who tries to, not about a guy, but with a man who's a character who tries to commit suicide 60 different times and always something always goes wrong. And Beckett loved the play. He wrote and he wrote the most beautiful note to me praising the play. And I realized it was like a clear imitation of his writing. Of course he loved it.
But what was it about how he lived that you found so
he had? I grew up a truck driver's son in Wakefield, Massachusetts, so there weren't a lot of artists around to observe. And when I went to New York, I met more than my share of artists. And I when I met Beckett, he had an integrity that I had never seen before. He really knew who he was, and he knew why he was on Earth. I think we all kind of have one question, and art exists for the question of why are we here? What are we supposed to do with our time? And he knew what he was supposed to do with his time, and he wasn't going to write a pilot for HBO. And he and I was deeply impressed, and that aspect of his life was something I wanted to imitate.
Or live, not necessarily imitate. I mean, do you feel like, well, you know why you're here now?
Don't you think living is often imitation? But anyway,
I should hope not. I should hope that it's that we experience it authentically. But
yes, but we're very influenced by something we've seen. It's rare that we have. Anyway, that's for another show and another time. But he really, I think, observing him and the way he comported himself just stopped me from time to time and made me think. I remember I was doing a television project. I was adapting a Norman Mailer novel, and I had three kids at that point that I was supporting. And I realized I hated the novel. I just hated it. I thought it was awful, and I gave the money back. And that was for me a Beckett moment. Yeah. That decision. It was, I think, one of the hardest things in life to do is to give the money back.
Well, on that note, I'm afraid we've got to wrap up because we've run out of time. It just blazed by. But you did mention your kids, and
I have to interrupt you, and because I'm doing a poetry reading tonight in Wakefield at the library at 7 o'clock. So if you're anywhere near Wakefield, please, please show up.
So you've got 3 hours to make it to Wakefield, and that you can anyone can get there. So thank you for getting that in. Israel Horovitz, playwright and screenwriter, your new play, Gloucester Blue, is premiering at the Gloucester Stage Company next month. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.